This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. The word honor has gotten quite a workout this week. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and President Bush have used it often to describe their dismay at prisoner abuse by American guards at Baghdad's Abu Ghraib prison. New movies like Troy and King Arthur are filled with heroes who are described as vanquishing evil, battling for freedom, and dying for honor. But is honor in ancient Greece or medieval England the same as honor in modern America? Webster's dictionary defines honor as honesty, fairness, or integrity in one's belief and actions. Would you define it that way? We asked people on the National Mall here in Washington this fairly simple question: what is honor?
I guess for me it's along the same lines of like having strong morals and like doing the right thing,
carrying on your family's heritage, your beliefs, and staying with them.
Following all the ideals that you've been taught throughout your life, trying to live as close to them as possible.
I don't know. Just respect to me is honor, and serving your country.
You don't want to do things which belittle your family's name by actions which reflect badly on your family, things like that. That's honor.
Personal definitions of honor from Yolanda Davis, Susan Sleeman, Jerry Hirsch, Sarah Salazar, and Hamid Kizilbash, who were all visiting the National Mall in Washington yesterday afternoon. Today, we'll get more interpretations of honor from an ethicist, an observer of West Point culture, and a Muslim imam. And we want to hear from you. What does honor mean to you? Is it important to you personally, or do you think it's an ideal that has slipped from our everyday lives? Is honor the same for men and women? And has anyone ever defended your honor? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Randy Cohen. He writes the Ethicist column in the New York Times Magazine and joins us from his office in New York. Thanks for being with us today, Randy.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
It's good to talk to you. So what's your definition of honor?
Well, like most words in English, honor has many meanings. And I think your listeners, the folks you interviewed, touched on the two most significant ones for this discussion. Honor refers to your reputation, the public esteem, which is to say what other people in the community think of you. But it also refers to having a keen sense of ethics or acting in accord with your own values, which is what you yourself do and what you think of yourself. And it's a very dubious virtue, honor, because all this sounds very good, but you're only really as admirable as those values themselves. It's one thing to live your values, but it depends what the values are.
Right, and I guess I was thinking about honor among thieves. I mean, if the values are generally considered in conflict with what's accepted and proper, but then I guess you unpeel the onion a little further. What's accepted and proper? I mean, maybe honor is okay, even if it seems wrong to some people. I mean, it's still, you have to make a judgment about what's an acceptable value, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I earn the big ethics money for doing that in the Times Magazine every week. And the task is not just to make it personal, although the sense of this will vary from culture to culture. As you said in your introduction, what would have been regarded as honorable behavior in ancient Greece is different from the way we earn honor now. But my task is to define a set of principles so fundamental, so persuasive, that everyone would agree that they define honorable behavior. It's not easy.
Is there a downside to honor?
Yes, there's a terrible side to honor. If you are acting with tremendous courage to live your values, and those values are dubious. For instance, the blue wall of silence, where some police officers felt it essential to their sense of honor to cover up wrongdoing. Well, they were acting honorably within the police culture, but in my view, they were acting dreadfully. Or when the Boy Scouts kicked out all the gay kids, they saw that as honorable behavior according to their system of values, but I believe you could make a persuasive case that they acted despicably. Or in Bangladesh during their war for independence, when women who were raped were then beaten by their fathers to protect the family's honor. This was an odious thing to do.
Right. Well, you actually raise a point that I wanted to address, and that's, is there a gender difference in honor and perceptions of honor?
Yes. I have to say I'm not a big fan of honor. Honor is a very dubious virtue, and I think you've touched on a keen thing. The tremendous literature we have of defending someone's honor, which almost inevitably means a man defending the honor of a woman, it's just a tool of sexism. It's a way to keep women in their place because it reduces a woman to a thing, essentially the property of her husband. And so things that befall her, the most woeful, dreadful things that befall her, are given significance only in the way they reflect on him. This is a terrible thing. This is simply sexism.
Okay, let's invite our listeners to join this conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And let's go to Michael in Boston, Massachusetts. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello. One of, I think, the most striking differences between modern honor and the older forms is that it's more democratic. If you were a samurai or a medieval nobleman or an Achaean warrior, honor really extended to your dealings with other people of your same class, whereas you could kill a peasant or a helot or get her pregnant and abandon her without any kind of consequence or any feeling that you had besmirched your honor. And I think there's strong relevance here to the question of human rights, because at least the way I think of them, they are human rights. They're not the rights of people who are like us or people who are good. They're rights of people who are people.
Randy?
An excellent point, and one that refers back to what we were saying earlier, that our task is to define fundamental principles that accord these rights universally. And it's interesting to see, I think, a very successful attempt to do that was the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, which managed to establish fundamental moral principles that apply to all nations. And they got all member states of the most diverse cultures to agree to these particular basic principles, ways we can and cannot treat one another, even though if you asked to define particular behaviors, many different nations would argue, but principles could be established.
Michael,
very heartening.
Michael, thanks for the call.
Sure.
I wonder though, again, getting to this question of are there class differences in honor? I mean, does honor, if we're a democracy and all men are created equal, to quote a famous phrase, does that mean that honor applies equally across the society?
It means that we should establish general ideas about right behavior that apply to all. But you know, here in our country not so long ago, Ku Klux Klansmen would lynch African Americans because they thought had acted in ways that affronted the racial honor of white people. These were folks that met both our early definitions of honor, public esteem. These Klansmen were regarded as honorable men in their community, and they themselves would have thought they had a keen sense of ethics. But we of course, regard such behavior as despicable because we can establish principles that apply to all, regardless of race or gender or economic class.
It sounds like a hard thing to apply absolutes to. I mean, it sounds like today's truth is different from tomorrow's truth.
In terms of particular behavior, we can certainly see that ideas of honor have changed from time to time and place to place. But I still believe that we can all agree on certain general principles that when we get that time machine working, we could persuade all people to embrace. For instance, that I am entitled to the same rights as you, that equality of opportunity. This is a fundamental principle that I think we would all embrace.
So there are some things we can all agree on.
The particular behaviors we might quibble about, but I really do believe that we have a great chance to persuade everyone that the underlying moral principles could be embraced by all.
Okay. Joining me now is David Lipsky, the author of Absolutely American, 4 Years at West Point. He joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in.
Joe, it's great to be here.
So, David, what is honor to you?
Well, I hadn't, like Randy, I come from a civilian background and didn't have a very clear idea of honor until I spent the 4 years I spent researching the book. But one thing that was very heartening to me about West Point and the Army is they boiled down what honorable behavior is to just essentially three rules that I think would apply across cultures and across time. They basically, they give the cadets when they arrive at West Point what are called the three rules of thumb, and you can use these rules to determine if your action is honorable. First rule is, 1, does this action attempt to deceive anyone or allow anyone else to be deceived? 2. Does this action gain or allow the gain of a privilege or advantage to which I or someone else would not otherwise be entitled? And finally, 3. Would I be satisfied by the outcome if I were on the receiving end of this action?
So fairness seems to come into play here.
I think it just it's sort of a, I mean, you can see Kant in that. You can see about 2,000 years of philosophical sort of investigation boiled down into 3 basic rules that I think can work for almost any action to determine whether it's honorable or not.
So are those three rules enough to live an honorable life by?
Well, it carries the cadets at West Point through 4 years, and it carries them through 5 and 20-year military careers after they graduate. Yes, I believe they are.
And do you agree, Randy was speaking earlier, that he had some less than flattering thoughts about honor, that it had a downside? How do you see that?
Randy, go ahead.
No, okay. What's interesting here is we're putting the emphasis entirely on individual rectitude, that we're discussing this with the assumption that the way to promote honorable behavior is by making each person accountable for his or her own actions. And that's certainly important, but I'm not persuaded that it's the most important thing way to achieve the results we hope for. That there are conditions, as we've learned to our despair, in the news about the treatment of Iraqi prisoners, there are conditions under which people tend to act very badly indeed, and left to matters of individual rectitude, they will not.
And Randy, do you believe that the people at Abu Ghraib prison felt they were behaving honorably?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. We can also see this in the Stanford experiment that I think got a lot of press now.
This is the Phil Zimbardo experiment where students were asked to take on the role of prison guards.
Yeah.
Prisoners.
When you create those conditions, nearly everyone will act badly. Or you can see it in the careers of police officers, that if you put a rookie cop in a corrupt precinct house, you tend to get a dirty cop.
Sure, but Randy, do you remember how this investigation started on the Army side?
Yes, that one exceptional person acted very well and reported wrongdoing, but the overwhelming majority of, and there will always be extraordinarily virtuous people, but most of us will act neither as saints or as sinners. Most of us will behave about as well as our neighbors. So what was more striking than that, as impressive as was this individual act of virtue, that most people acted very, very badly, not because they were particularly wicked people, but because they were put in a situation that promotes dreadful behavior.
I mean, I think one of the very nice things, and I think a reason why I stayed at West Point for the 4 years, and one thing I think that attracts cadets to both West Point and to the Army, is it's a place that has the courage to say, look, here's what we believe right now in this place is the proper way for a man and woman to act. Here's what we believe are the models for what honorable behavior is. And, you know, the word they use at West Point beyond honor is just living to standard. I think when people have the bravery to live to a standard, it inspires people to live to standard themselves, like the brave whistleblowers we were talking about earlier.
Right, but the whistleblower is always the exception, almost by definition. And what's the longer I've done the column, the more emphasis I tend to put on what creates the conditions under which people will behave well or behave badly. And what's striking about the investigation is that the problem seemed to be systemic and not a result of someone who was particularly dishonorable.
Of course, Randy, but if in fact no one could agree on what's appropriate or honorable behavior, we wouldn't have essentially nationwide revulsion to those photos and to that code of behavior. So I think that when people actually are encouraged to say to themselves, look, what is it that I consider honorable, what I consider dishonorable, I think that tends to lead to better behavior across the board. Hemingway had a great, just quick personal definition. He said, honorable behavior is what you don't feel bad about afterwards.
Well, yeah, that's interesting, except it depends what community you live in. The same West Point soldiers not so long ago felt perfectly comfortable attending a segregated school and operating in a segregated army, both racially segregated and gender segregated, and they felt honorable. They were comfortable with those decisions and those practices. They lived up to the values of the community, but they were dubious values.
Randy, we need to take a break. We're talking about honor, what it is, and how it can change depending on how the culture defines it. You can join the conversation at 800-989-TALK. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about the concept of honor. How do you define it? What is an honorable life? Have you ever defended someone's honor? Why? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests this hour are Randy Cohen. He writes the column The Ethicist for the New York Times Magazine, and David Lipsky. He's the author of Absolutely American, 4 Years at West Point. And let's take some of your calls. How about Anthony in Cape May, New Jersey? Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I have a comment and a question. My comment is, I was a Boy Scout. I was in the Army in the 101st. Honor has always been an important thing to me. But my question is, do you find that there is a difference between personal honor and, for example, the honor involved in protecting the innocent? Sometimes they can be in conflict, like you said, with the Army, with segregation policies. I tend to think that an overarching fundamental goal of anyone who's honorable is to protect the innocent.
Let me ask David Lipsky to respond to you, Anthony. Hold on a sec.
There was a great thing that I saw at West Point. It's one of the things I was proudest of to write in the book. The basic thing they say at West Point is that you lead from the front, that all leaders actually, that they live, they lead by example, and they live to standard. You know, Anthony, do you remember the basic slogan of the infantry? It's follow me. And
yeah.
And one of the things that I loved in watching this officer named Colonel Kersey, who was the head of military training at West Point, is Colonel Kersey was the most popular figure at West Point. He was the person who was brought out to remind people why they were in the Army, why they should try their hardest in infantry and in the other combat branches and in the support branches. And during my second year at West Point, one of Colonel Kersey's subordinates made a politically incorrect joke on his computer. And then he went to give a lecture to some cadets, and to save time taking just writing notes down, he shared his computer to the Academy Drive, which made everything on his computer available to everybody at West Point. And, you know, people at West Point aren't always allowed to leave post, and so the way they travel on the web. And some guys were flipping through the web. They found this disk drive they hadn't seen before, went on it, found the joke, thought it was funny, sent it to some friends. Turned out those friends had some friends, and by that evening, every inbox on West Point had seen this gag. And by the morning, it was quite clear this guy was going to get kicked out. And by the evening, people on West Point were talking about court-martialing this young captain who had made this joke. Now, Colonel Kersey had grown up in the Army, and he'd remember that basic rule, which is that you lead by example, and that a leader is responsible for everything his followers either do or fail to do. And within a few weeks, he stepped forward. The Article 15 came down, which found that this captain was going to be kicked out of the Army. And he thought about that place where personal honor and institutional honor, where they kind of intersect. And he stepped forward and said, look, I'm a leader. I lead by example. And what my followers do is a direct reflection of me. So if you're going to fire this guy, fire me instead. And this colonel was dismissed from the U.S. Army. And that's an example that mattered a huge amount to everybody at West Point, to people who've tried to bring those lessons out into the field army now.
That's outstanding. That's an amazing example of, in my opinion, someone stepping forward and showing extreme personal integrity and honor. When you know, in for example, in the business world, you know that young captain would have been hung out to dry.
Anthony, I'd never seen anything like it, and it was a great thing to have a chance to write about and tell people about, because he said, look, I can say these things, and then now I'm going to live them. And I think for everybody who saw that happen up there at West Point, it was an example of why that's better for the community as well.
Anthony, thanks for the call. Randy, does that story evoke any feelings in you?
What's striking about that story is that it's an utter contrast with the way the senior staff in the Army is behaving now, or for that matter, the entire administration. There's been serious, horrible, grotesque wrongdoing, and while the Secretary of Defense says, oh, I take responsibility, that apparently is merely a magic phrase. He needn't actually do anything. No senior member of the Army has stepped down as a consequence of this. In the aftermath of September 11th, a catastrophic intelligence failure, there was no senior staff at the FBI or CIA followed a similar example and said, yes, there's been a tremendous failure on my watch. I am honor-bound to step down. That Dave tells an extraordinary story, but it's one that we find few examples of in the people in power now.
But you were saying that honorable behavior didn't matter, but when people see a thing like that, it encourages them.
Did
Matt.
You said that you thought honor was a concept that actually was detrimental.
I said honor is a dubious concept, that to live your values is only meaningful if those are admirable values.
Let's try another call. I'll go to Jerry in Fort Myers, Florida. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting conversation. I was thinking about the concept of honor and how it's very tied into the social context. Doesn't it necessarily imply that you have to have a working concept of empathy in order to act honorably? And like, doesn't honor within the context of normal society act very differently than than honor acts within the context of like the mafia or a street gang?
It depends how universally you ascribe those who are entitled to be treated as human beings. The mafia is an interesting sort of notion, or at least the movie mafia, because what do I know? That it's okay to lie and cheat and steal as long as you do that to people outside the family. It's them and us. It's a concept of honor that says there's one kind of behavior that you do to other people and another kind of behavior to which we in the family are entitled. In my view, this is an odious idea that all human beings are entitled to certain fundamental, decent, humane treatment. So I embrace your idea, and that requires empathy. It requires seeing yourself as akin to everyone else.
But Randy, I would also add that when they were trying to formalize those basic three rules for honorable behavior at West Point, that was why they added that third term, which is, would I be satisfied if I were on the receiving end of this action?
Yeah, that's a great rule. It kind of implies the golden rule too, doesn't it?
It really does.
It looks for universality. And that's often a great test for judging your behaviors. If I were on the, you must make a rule that works no matter which side of the transaction you're on.
The honor in that situation seems to be hypocritical, though. Like their egos are so fragile and their honor is so easily offended, yet they can turn around and do precisely the same thing to somebody else and think nothing of it.
Wait a minute. Whose honor and whose ego are we talking about here?
Like within the context of a power and control situation like the mafia or a street gang or within a fascist or totalitarian state.
Oh, yeah, I'm not defending that.
Yeah, I understand you're not defending it. Yeah, I do get that.
Don Corleone is on his own as far as I'm concerned. That what it relies on, I think, is a lack of what you refer to as empathy. It requires you to see other people as less than human and as not entitled to the same treatment you're getting. And as Dave said, the West Point Code includes a rule that tries to accommodate that.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Rick in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, I guess my question is this, is nobody has spoken about respect. And to me, honor and respect are very close hand in hand. And I guess I would like to know how Randy feels about if respect does have something to do with honor, then how could he say that honor was used with the prisoners when clearly there's no respect there for those people?
Randy, what about that?
My point was that those in power acted according to their own values. That the first definition of honor we had, we threw out, was having a keen sense of ethics, acting in accord with your value. And I regard this behavior as despicable, but there are people who have done dreadful things and believed they were utterly, that were in accord with their own code of honor. So that my point was, honor in itself, that living your values, is very dubious. It's very slippery. It could be admirable. It could not be. That there's no way to judge it without a consideration of the values themselves. And in the case we're describing, it was vile, of course.
Okay, David, do you want to take a crack?
Yeah, I mean, one reason why West Point was worth writing about for 4 years, and I would say it's a great model for how other parts of the country could run. They saw that could be the case, just the things Randy is talking about in the mid-90s, and at West Point they'd always had what they called one bedrock value, and that was called just honor. And the idea was that whatever situation, however slippery it was that you got dropped into, you know, if you turn to honorable behavior, that would give your boots kind of solid ground. In the mid-90s, when they realized that the Army was going to take them into contact with a lot of different peoples and different cultures, they realized that they had to add a second bedrock value, and the one they came up with was respect. Respect for others, respect for other cultures.
Okay. David Lipsky, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure being on. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
David Lipsky is the author of Absolutely American, 4 Years at West Point. Joining us now from Los Angeles, California, is Imam Sayyid Mustafa Al-Kazwini. He's the imam at the Islamic Education Center of Orange County in California, and we speak with him often about the situation in Iraq. Imam, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and glad to be with you today, Joe.
So how do you define honor?
I think I define it from an Islamic perspective. We believe in Islam that people have to recognize that they have precious value, and they are the priority in this universe in God's creation, and they are the most important item that God has created, and therefore they have to maintain this value, which is called honor, throughout their life. Islam attaches so much value to the honor of the people that the station of honor of the people is mentioned along with the majesty of God in the Quran, meaning that as much as God is concerned about his majesty, he's also concerned about people's honor and dignity. And there are plenty of verses, of course, in the Quran which speaks about people's honor. One of them is chapter 17, verse 70, which says that we have indeed honored the sons of Adam, meaning that this concept is a universal one. All people, regardless of their faith, color, race, are respected and honored, and this is an inherent quality bestowed upon them by God.
Interesting. We have a call from Sean in Seneca Falls, New York, who might have a point relevant to that. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, can people have honor without being taught honor itself? And also, where does honor apply in between groups where, like, if you're a soldier and you're the other... and you were sent to kill. There's a lot of people, like a person sitting in the room with me just said she defines most of military honor as false because all killing is wrong. So between groups, how can you have honor if you're doing something that in a third party sense would be despicable?
Imam, I wonder about that. Can you really, are you born with a sense of honor, or do you have to learn it and be taught it?
We believe in the Islamic faith that we are born with a sense of honor. This is natural disposition with all the humans that the moment they come into this life, they know they have value, they know they have honor, and they know that they have to maintain that and protect that, even if they are not taught. However, religion comes and try to reinforce these ideas and remind us of this honor, and this is why we also in the Islamic tradition have a saying of a Prophet Muhammad, which states that God, the Almighty, He delegated humans with their affairs. They can be in charge of all of their affairs freely, except dehumanizing themselves. They have no permission from God to do that. So we are born with honor, and of course we also learn that from people around us, from our parents, from the families that we live in, and also from the society.
We're talking about honor, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Randy Cohen is still on the line with us from New York. Randy, do you have a feeling about the notion of our internal being imbued with honor, or having it being something you're born with?
Yeah, it's tricky to indulge in these nature-nurture discussions. It's very elusive, isn't it? But I have observed more and more that, at least from the perspective of the kind of questions people ask me at the New York Times, when you put people in conditions in which it's possible to behave well, it's quite inspiring how often they will behave well. And when you put them in conditions where it's very difficult to do that, we tend to behave very badly indeed. That it's a bit disconcerting to notice how much human behavior transcends what we think of as our individual values, what we see as matters of great individual rectitude and character that we all have. But on the other hand, it's very inspiring because it's a cause for optimism. It says if we create decent societies, if we create the circumstances under which it's possible to behave well, people will. And so if you believe that, and I do, then it's incumbent on us to work to build a just society because that's the only way we can expect people to behave well as individuals.
Let's go back to our callers. Enrico in Gilbert, Arizona, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I just wanted to go on and say I grew up in one of the Latin American cultures, and one of the main differences that I noticed coming to the U.S. is in Latin America, you defend your honor. Over here, you defend your rights. So the basis for honor is taken kind of away from you. I have examples growing up, but you always wonder what is honorable or not, but what we learn to do is you got to take a step back, and basically sincerity is the basis for honor. Honor doesn't need to be imposed and ruled from the outside. It's to be from the inside. I think most people have an internal compass that tells you what to do, and in general, if somebody oversteps your bounds, whatever the situation may be, you got to continue doing what you believe in and defend your honor that way, whether it be continue a line of work or, it doesn't have to be a fist fight. But when it comes to that, it comes to that. And when it's over, it's over. If you lose, you lose. You defended your honor and you lost, but you go on. You don't, look for vengeance afterwards.
I see. I want to ask the imam at this point, is there a universal honor? We've been trying to come to terms with that. Is there something that goes past Muslim, past South American, past American, and goes all the way to universal in the sense of honor?
Yes, I do believe that honor has a transcendent meaning with which all cultures and all humans and all religions believe in it, and a certain degree of dignity and respect and value that the human have to have, which really distinguishes them from animals. However, this significance may vary from society to society. For instance, in certain Islamic societies today, people can survive without food, without shelter, without medicine, without electricity, but not without honor and dignity. And this is what happened in Iraq, really. The disgraceful and shameful acts that we witnessed, in the past few days on the TVs and on the in the newspapers, infringes on the very basic aspirations and the needs of the people. It dehumanizes people, degrades them. Scenes of nudity, for instance, even if it does not involve sexual, for instance, abuse still is unacceptable, is unlawful,
Imam, I have to cut you off there. We need to take a short break, and I'd like to thank Randy Cohen from the New York Times for joining us on the show. We'll be right back, and I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're speaking this hour about honor, and we're talking with Imam Saeed Mustafa Al-Qazwini. He's the imam at the Islamic Education Center of Orange County in California. Imam, when Saddam Hussein was in charge of the Abu Ghraib prison, he was known for torturing men with dishonor. Can you explain that to us?
Absolutely. During 34 years of his rule and the Ba'ath Party's rule, this place, Abu Ghraib, was known as a notorious place. And in fact, I personally have an experience with that place. My 15 members of my family were taken to Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad, and some of them were executed, including my grandfather. So people in Iraq, they really, after the liberation of that country from the Ba'athist and from the Saddamist, they wanted to see a new dawn for Iraq, a dawn which brings them democracy, freedom, respect. But unfortunately, we, for instance, we wanted to see that prison to be turned into a museum where generations would come, whether inside Iraq or from outside Iraq, to come and learn and see how one person can destroy an entire society. But unfortunately, it turned to be the opposite. That is, still this notorious prison is still operating, and still there are some human who are being tortured and abused in that prison.
In Islam, is dishonor worse than death?
Yes, in some cases, yes. Honor is more important than the life itself, because what gives essence and meaning to our life is honor and dignity. And if that one is taken away, then there is no meaning for the life. Life will be left meaningless. And when you torture a group of people, in fact, Islam considers that an insult and a torture to the entire humanity. These are crimes against the humanity. And when people's honor is taken away and destroyed, I think nothing can restore that, nothing can reclaim that. Restitution is very hard when people's honor and dignity is taken away from them.
Well, I want to tease that out a little bit. Is there, I mean, surely forgiveness is part of Muslim teaching at some level, but you're saying that with a violation of honor, there is not forgiveness.
There is forgiveness, provided that we learn a lesson here, and then we have to punish those who committed these crimes, because sometimes someone commits a crime with no intention, and sometimes with intention. He plans for that. He designed for that. He is sent to a country where he is promising the people of that country that there is no more abuse, no more torture, no more degradation, no more humiliation. But then within a couple, 2 or 3 months after that, he starts exercising all the humiliation against the people. I think they have to pay a higher price for that. Okay. Yes, there is room for forgiveness. People can forgive, but it is hard for them to forget these incidents.
Okay. I'd like to thank you for joining us today, Imam.
Thank you, Joe.
Imam Saeed Mustafa Al-Qazwini is an imam at the Islamic Education Center of Orange County, California.